Hey there, I'm Grant Wall. Welcome to the Planet Football Podcast. This week's interview guest is radio host Jason Davis. While we've got you, make sure to check out Planet Football TV, SI's weekly soccer video series that I co-host with Luis Miguel Echegaray. We've got interviews, debate, and thoughtful opinions on the game we all love. That's Planet Football TV. Onward! Our guest today is Jason Davis. He's the host of the daily radio show, The United States of Soccer, on Sirius XMFC, and he's relaunching his old podcast with Jared Dubois, The Best Soccer Show, under a new name, JD and the Rod, America's Best Soccer Show. Jason, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Grant. It's good to be here.
Yeah, great to have you on the podcast. We've certainly done a lot of these interviews in the past on your shows. And I guess I would just start by asking, you know, most of our listeners have probably heard of you, but for those who haven't, where can they hear you and what are you doing in the soccer media world these days?
Everything. Well, I mean, obviously the radio show, which you mentioned, is my day to day. It is bread and butter. You know, everything that happens in American soccer, I'm talking about it on that program. 3 hours now. We expanded just this year to a 3-hour program, so it gives us plenty of space to kind of stretch out and you know, it's talk radio, it's sports talk radio, so it's got a bit of that you know, let's push the envelope a little bit, let's have some some strong opinions, some hot takes, but I try to make it as I try to make it as cerebral as possible, but also as inclusive as possible, and by that I mean I recognize that there aren't any other places like my show for American soccer to be covered in a sort of extensive way. I mean, there are great podcasts. You're doing one. Lots of people are doing podcasts, but sort of a live daily program that can people can call into and interact with the host on, that just doesn't happen. So I want to make sure that we're covering as much of American soccer as possible, as much as I can certainly process. But that's the main thing, and then. I've been dabbling with another podcast, and that's where I came from. I came from podcasts, so I've been dabbling with some things for a little while, and I always wanted to restart the Best Soccer Show, my old podcast, which kind of led to the radio career with my friend Jared Dubois. We had a very cool following. People really loved that show. It caught something at that time. We tried to do that show live as often as possible to give people a chance to call in and interact on American soccer topics when that wasn't a thing in the landscape, and now we're bringing it back, and under a slightly new name for reasons I don't really want to get into too much. Otherwise, I'll just say that the old name was not available to us, and we'll move on from there.
Gotcha. I mean, I used to listen to the Best Soccer Show back in the day, but I thought it was gone forever. What went into you and Jared restarting your podcast?
I think it's just life. We are on very different tracks. I mean, back when we started the show, I was a guy who had a 9-to-5 office job, and I had a young child, and I was just trying to scrape by. I had no idea if I was going to have any sort of soccer media career. It was literally a labor of love. And because we had something working, because I started, you know, when I started my blog and started a podcast, somebody said, "Hey, Jared would be a great co-host." And we came together, and the chemistry was really, really good. And people liked what we did. It started a snowball effect. And eventually, through some other circumstances, it allowed me to have a career. While Jared has always been, you know, a guy who had a job outside of soccer and who had two young children and, you know, was doing some other things. And he got to a point, and this is partly about relationships with other people, but he got to a point where he said, I can't really work this into my schedule every day with the kids and everything else. And now 3 years later, things have changed. He's got a little time. He's got a little bit more ability to provide some bandwidth for it. And I've got enthusiasm, and I wanted to do it. And I think that I miss doing the show. I mean, honestly, for me, on a personal level, Jared's on the other side of the country. We do it remotely. I like talking to him all the time. He's one of my best friends, and it gives me an opportunity to do that, to talk soccer, and then to share it with people who like our show.
So, one, I'm excited about that as a consumer in the past of your guys' podcast. Let's go back a ways here, because I don't know if I've ever asked you this question. How did you get into soccer in the first place.
What do you mean? How did I become a soccer fan? Or do you mean how did I get into this job? Because those
what's your soccer story, man? I mean, like, yeah. For me, like, it was the 1990 World Cup and watching every game, and like, I was in after mm-hmm. that. So, yeah. Like, what was it for you?
It was a slower burn for me, although, you know, lots of people played as kids. I played as a kid. I was a military brat. My dad was in the Air Force, and I played up until I was 11. And I really liked it. And I had a team that was pretty good. And I had a coach who at the time I thought knew what he was doing. Who knows? You know, it was American soccer in the 80s. And we moved. And when we moved, my parents either signed me up for the wrong program or it just didn't click. And I didn't like the team I was on. It wasn't up to my personal soccer standard. And I stopped playing. And once I stopped playing, and this is, by this point, it's the very early 90s. There's nothing there. There's nothing in American soccer to keep my attention. And I was a sports-obsessed kid who liked to watch the NFL, college football, baseball, whatever it was. And so I drifted away pretty quickly from soccer because there was no professional version to keep my interest. And I remember the World Cup. I was in my early teens then. I don't remember necessarily being super engaged with the World Cup in 94. I think it was 2002 before I was really like, oh, this is interesting and maybe I'm into this. And getting up early, being a young adult, being able to get up super early to watch the games on the other side of the world and watching the United States make that run with Landon Donovan and DeMarcus Beasley and John O'Brien and all those guys. And then through the mid-2000s, it was kind of just a slow burn. It was, oh, I found Fox Sports World and I found the Premier League and I thought those atmospheres were amazing over there. And that drew me in, and then I became interested in Major League Soccer, and I'm watching that sort of casually for a couple years, and then Beckham arrives, and now I'm like, wow, this is really going to be something. And then I become very intent on how do we make the United States men's national team into a world champion, and that became my focus. And then I launch a blog, and then I get a podcast, and then, you know, lots of yada yada yadas, but there we go.
Okay, and at what point did this become a full-time work gig for you?
Well, that's a matter of the circumstance that ultimately led to the end of the Best Soccer Show, partly. Back in 2013, I was still working the office job. I had a little bit of income coming in from soccer. I was writing a bit. I had the podcast was getting a little bit of advertising revenue. And I got laid off from the job I had. They outsourced my position. And I had no idea what I was going to do. And I came home. And I cried because I had a young son and I didn't know how I was going to provide for my family. And things were very, very tight anyway. And things weren't great in the relationships I had at the time. And I remember the producer we had for the Best Soccer Show said, hey, why don't we try to do something daily? And I that scared the hell out of me. I had no idea how we would possibly do that. How can I do a daily soccer show and make enough money to survive? And so I said, okay, fine, I'll look for interviews to get a real job, a quote-unquote real job. And in the meantime, maybe we start this. And I remember that day, and I'm not sure he does, but I remember that day Brian Strauss got on the phone with me. And maybe I called him, maybe he called me, I don't know. And I talked to him for about an hour. And Brian said, hey, you're a pretty good writer, but there are lots and lots of people out there writing stuff on soccer that do a good job. What you're really good at is talking. And you should do that. That should be your thing. And I said, oh, okay, maybe I should do that. Maybe I should focus on that. Maybe the Daily Show is a good idea. And so we launched Soccer Morning. We crowdfunded it a little bit. We launched Soccer Morning. We strung together two or three different contracts with sort of soccer startups during that period. It was a very weird period in American soccer. Kick TV got involved for a little while. World Soccer Talk was involved for a little while. And then ultimately, the radio gig came out of that, and the radio people said, you know, we can make you full time, and this is going to be better for you and supporting your family. And I made a decision to do that, to take the contract with the radio that ended Soccer Morning, and it also ended the Best Soccer Show, and then that's where we are at this point. The last couple of years being on the radio.
Okay, got it. That's a great story. Thanks for sharing that. You know, like, soccer media in the U.S., as you know, it's tough. You know, there's a lot of labor of love folks out there, and the process of finding a way to get from labor of love to full-time sustainable job is so freaking hard.
Yeah, it's really tough. And I sometimes people ask me, you know, how do I do it? How do I get into soccer media? And, you know, there's obviously the X factor of talent. And I'm not somebody who runs around saying I'm the most talented guy in the world. It's why I am where I am. But it would be ridiculous for me to say that there's not some talent involved, that I'm not lucky to be able to do this and get on the radio and talk for 3 hours and make it sound good and say smart things occasionally and get people interested. I mean, that there's some weird alchemy happening there. But what I tell people more than anything else is don't quit. And I know that's really hard. I mean, I came so close so many times to saying, okay, that's it. There's no money left. Let's go back to, you know, quote unquote, real life. Let's go back to sitting behind a desk for 8 hours a day and punching numbers into a computer or whatever it was I was qualified for. But if people want to make this a thing, you can't stop doing it at the first sign of trouble, at the first sign of disappointment, because otherwise you'll never get there. So many, I sometimes think about that, Grant, and I know you've had this experience too, having been around as long as you have. There were so many great soccer writers and so many great blogs and so many people doing cool things, and then you look up 5 years later and go, oh yeah, what happened to that person? Where did they go?
Yeah, no, it's totally true. I really admire the way you've made this work. I'm also so excited that you and Jared are coming back. Now, if you could pick a couple of great moments in the podcast that you had with Jared before, your favorite moments, what would they be?
Wow. You know, we did a lot of live sort of post-game stuff around the U.S. men's national team. I think we did pre-game. We were making this all work through the internet and broadcasting it live. We had people calling us. This is more of a general thing than a specific thing, but we had people calling us from their cars leaving stadiums after watching the U.S. men's national team play. They would pull us up on their phone because that's the only place they could get us. And then they would call us to say, oh, I can't believe Klinsmann did X or whatever happened. And it was pretty amazing. I remember doing Soccer Morning. I know we did a Best Soccer Show as well around Landon Donovan not making the World Cup team in 2014. And that being a big thing. And we just had, we had these people who kind of came and became part of the show. You know, there was a character element to it. We had a guy call us one time after Michael Orozco made a national team roster, and I think he was still Michael Orozco Fiscal at that point.
I remember this.
Yeah, and so this guy calls up and he's like, Michael freaking Orozco Fiscal, and we clipped it and it became a drop that we would play, and it's not even about Michael Orozco anymore. It's just kind of this frustration in this guy's voice, like this what is this? And then that, actually, it was funny because Michael Orozco then went on to score a goal at the Azteca.
Yep,
United States get a draw in a friendly, I think. So pretty amazing stuff.
In terms of just your favorite radio voices over the years as someone who has consumed sports talk radio, sports radio, who are some of your favorite radio voices?
Wow, that's a really good question. This is not my style at all, and I don't know if I could replicate it, but I remember listening to Pharrell, if you remember Pharrell.
Yeah.
Pharrell on the Bench, late nights when I was in my teenage years. I was a radiophile. I mean, it makes sense that I landed where I did because I listened to so much radio. I listened to comedy talk radio, sort of shock jock stuff. I mean, whether it was Howard Stern or in DC here, we had a duo called Don and Mike, who I listened to religiously in the afternoons as a teenager. But it was Pharrell. There are guys, another group of guys in DC called the Sports Junkies, and they're a big inspiration for me. I don't necessarily track with them anymore. I don't have a chance to listen to radio. They kind of do things that aren't in my wheelhouse, but when I was in my formative years, when I was in my teenage years and into my 20s, these guys had a public access show in Bowie, Maryland, in Prince George's County, Maryland. And the local radio station decided to give them like a spot on the weekend. I don't know who pitched who. I don't really know how that worked out. But they had a spot on the weekend, and pretty soon they turned it into a morning. I think maybe they're in the afternoons for a while or the nights or something. But they kind of moved up the ladder, and eventually they became the morning show on one of the biggest stations in DC, and they've been doing it for 20 years now. And I remember in high school, after knowing this story, thinking, hey, maybe I can do that. And I pitched, I remember, I don't talk about this a lot. Maybe I was 17 and I was getting ready to go to college, so the timing wouldn't have worked anyway. But I remember sending a tape and a letter to the program director, the local talk radio station. It wasn't even sports talk. It was just a talk radio station, but they had a sprinkling of sports. And I said, wouldn't it be great to have a 17-year-old kid hosting a show? How unique would that be? And I was so shy, I probably never would have been able to pull it off. But he wrote me back, and he said, actually, I didn't send the tape. He wrote me back and said, send me a tape. And then I tried to make the tape, and then I chickened out, and it never happened. So, so there you go.
Awesome. What have you learned about the American soccer fan doing what you do?
Look, I think that's a good question. I think the American soccer fan in general they care very much about the state of soccer in the United States. That manifests in different ways. Sometimes it's anger, and there are lots of people who are very angry about soccer in this country. And I think sometimes my role is to be a calming influence, to say, look, hey, it's a game. Yes, we want everybody to have access. We want the best coaching. We want our administrators to do the job right. We want them to take care of the people they're supposed to take care of. Those things are all important. But at the end of the day, I mean, we're talking about a game here. But anger is part of it. I also think that American soccer fans are generally pretty hopeful. I think that they want to believe that we're headed in the right direction. And that's why it hurts so much when we find out we're maybe not, when we miss a World Cup, or there are clear signs of a lack of an understanding of the soccer culture in the country on the part of, say, the Federation. I think that American soccer fans are also obviously all over the map, and that makes it difficult. I mean, I talk a lot about how we have so many different sort of lanes for being a soccer fan in the United States. And there's a whole subculture of youth soccer. I mean, sometimes that connects up the ladder to professional soccer, to the academy environment. Sometimes it doesn't. It's just moms and dads and kids playing soccer. We have a whole Latino, you know, sort of immigrant focused community in this country that doesn't really hit the radar of a lot of people because they're watching the Premier League or they're watching Major League Soccer. We have people who are very provincial about American soccer and their role in it and how they see it and how that's the right way. We have people that love college soccer to a fault and maybe don't realize some of the flaws there, or do realize the flaws and still want to push college soccer forward. And that's great, but it also means it's hard to pull all these threads together. And I think that my grand unified theory of American soccer over the years has kind of turned in the direction of, we have this tapestry and that's fantastic, but we don't communicate very well.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, there's a real fragmentation in the soccer audiences in the U.S. in terms of the different soccer leagues that they follow. And that's always a challenge from a media perspective on how mm-hmm. should we address that in our coverage here at Sports Illustrated, or I presume in what you're covering.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, if we're being perfectly honest here, Sports Illustrated, SI.com, traffic, we get more traffic for stories on the Premier League and Champions League.
Sure.
And than we do on MLS. And so that becomes, you know, we get more traffic for the U.S. national teams than we do for MLS. But, like, do you think, from a strategic perspective, is it better to try and hit one audience and focus on, say, American soccer than to try and do stuff where you're covering sort of a bunch of different things like Premier League and U.S. soccer?
Well, I think for me, my passion is American soccer. And from the very beginning, when I started my blog in 2008, when I started the first podcast I ever did, into the Best Soccer Show, into Soccer Morning even, which was more internationally focused, my interest was always first on American soccer. I care about the U.S. men's and women's national teams and MLS and things happening here and even issues of solidarity payments and training compensation more than I care about who wins the Premier League. That doesn't mean that I don't want to watch the Premier League. It doesn't mean that I don't, on some level, take a lot of enjoyment from the Premier League or the Champions League. I watch all those things. I want to see the best soccer too. But for me, what matters most is the American game. So when it's a matter of what I'm going to talk about or what I'm going to cover, I don't think about it strategically as, oh, if we talk about Manchester United today, more people are going to care. I also think, again, coming back to the radio show specifically, because it's a unique environment, a unique place for American soccer, I feel there's sort of an obligation. It's a balance between, okay, how much do I do I need to cover this story or that story, which I know admittedly isn't going to have a large audience right now, because I know that that it needs that exposure in order to help build the audience. I mean, I think we're seeing this right now coming out of the Women's World Cup and the NWSL, Grant, is and you know, I have to make myself, not because it's not, I don't care about the NWSL, I do, or not because I don't want to watch it, but there's so much other stuff going on. You go, okay, let's not forget about this, because it's been easy to, and I'm a product of the same structures that have prevented women's sports in general from being more popular than they are. And I have to be aware. And I know probably based on the demographics and the kind of people that are listening to our channel, that there's not a large existing audience for NWSL coverage. But if I don't cover it and I don't say something, I don't talk about how the Portland Thorns and North Carolina Courage played an incredible match, maybe somebody doesn't go, oh, well, I should check that out. I should see what these players are doing, Lindsay Horan and Crystal Dunn and everybody else. I should go watch that. I think there's a balance, because I know I also have to get people interested to keep my show going. So it's
right.
It's tough.
Yeah. No, I thought a lot about similar things. I am going to the NWSL final for Sports Illustrated this year. I haven't, to be honest, done that in a while. So it's interesting to see how all that works. Do you think we'll ever see soccer on shows like ESPN's First Take regularly, mm-hmm. or you know, the biggest shows on U.S. television that discuss sports? It's striking to me that as much as soccer has grown in the U.S., it's almost like those shows are afraid to talk soccer like they talk the NFL.
Well, I mean, I think that's understandable on the level that a lot of those people aren't intimately familiar with the game and with soccer, right, and with the culture of it. And I didn't get that. I mean, there is an accessibility issue for soccer. You have to come to it. It's not because, and I discussed this too, that when we talk about things like promotion, relegation, or some of the other things that happen around the world that aren't happening in the United States, the way that the game operates in other places, part of the reason for that is we don't have a cultural weight or a cultural base that kind of pushes all of that forward. So say, you know, in a country with pro rel, you can buy into that because everybody is at least on some level pulling in the direction of soccer. These people are all this, there's this big collection of clubs, and everybody kind of has, well, soccer matters here. That's not true in the United States. I mean, soccer matters to some people. We talked about fragmentation. It matters. Some of it matters to some people. Some other parts of it matter to some people. Soccer in general doesn't matter to anybody in a lot of places. So I think that it's just, and we also have that phenomenon now of just everything being more niche and more niche and more niche. So subcultures are a function of the internet. They're a function of the digital age. They're a function of being able to find whatever information, whatever content you want, on whatever thing you care about. So there's not as much of a reason for ESPN or anybody else to respond to that, unless it's a story that pushes up above sort of the main water level of soccer. I mean, it's when Colin Cowherd talks about Christian Pulisic, we can do the math on why that's happening, right? It's a matter of Fox having an interest in soccer, but also Christian Pulisic being the biggest American soccer player, the best American soccer player. We just don't have enough of those stories. And those people who know about football and baseball and basketball because they grew up with those things don't feel comfortable ranging into the world of how is the Champions League shaping up this year.
Got it. Yeah, that makes sense. I kind of want to wind down just by asking you, where do you think American soccer on the radio will be in 5 years?
I hope that SiriusXM FC still exists and I still have a
exactly.
job. That's a good question. Yeah, I don't know. Soccer on the radio is a weird one for me. I mean, I grew up listening to baseball on the radio and football on the radio. I don't think I ever listened to soccer on the radio. I know some teams in Major League Soccer have radio deals, so actual game broadcasts happen. I guess it works. I mean, I know the English love their soccer on the radio. In terms of talking about it, I would hope that you know, in terrestrial radio, there's some room made. I think that it's the same sort of phenomenon, obviously, for the ESPNs and the Fox Sports of the world, that these radio hosts typically aren't all that interested in soccer. It depends on where you are, I suppose. I can't speak to Portland or Seattle or even Atlanta, where it's a big deal. I'm in D.C. In D.C., there's one thing that everybody talks about, and even though that team is terrible. I mean, they'll mention the Nationals. They'll mention the Mystics a little bit. But really, it's only about one thing because American football dominates discussion so much. I think we're still, 5 years from now, we're still going to have, well, there are a couple of producers who like soccer who get a chance to do an hour on Saturdays. I think we're probably still going to be there.
So where can people find your new podcast?
Well, we're going to have the feed set up here shortly, so we'll be listed on Apple Podcasts and all of that in the near future. Right now, we have a Twitter account. It's JD and the Rod on Twitter. We are setting up. We have a Patreon where we opened that up. That was part of getting the show back off the ground. We've had an incredible response. We haven't been actively pushing that because we haven't been making shows yet, and that doesn't seem right. But people have found it, and we've had a really good response to that. So that's out there. And part of the fun thing, and one of the reasons to do it, is because there is a community. And with those people who are supporting the show, we've created a Slack community. So we have kind of a little in-group, which is why the name of the show is JD and the Rod, because we were back when the Best Soccer Show was running, one of our in-jokes was that if we were a morning radio talk show, we would be JD and the Rod. It would be like that. So that's why we went with that name. And so it does play directly to those people who listened to us back in the day. But of course, you know, we'd love to have a bunch of new listeners jump on board as well. I think it's fun. It's a mix. It's a little bit Morning Zoo Radio. It's a little bit sports talk, and it's a little bit soccer nerd, and it kind of throws them all together.
And when does it start?
We launch on October 23rd. The live call-in element was always something we used to do, so we are going to go live on October 23rd at 10 p.m. Eastern time. We're broadcasting it on Twitch, and then after the fact, it'll be available on podcasts.
The new podcast is JD and the Rod, America's Best Soccer Show. Jason Davis also hosts the United States of Soccer on Sirius XM FC 3 hours every weekday. Jason Davis, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Grant.
Thanks for listening to the Planet Football Podcast. I'd like to thank Jason Davis, as well as producer Brandon Nix, and everyone at Sports Illustrated who supports this podcast. Remember to check out Planet Football TV, SI's weekly soccer video series that I co-host with Luis Miguel Echegaray. We have interviews, debate, and thoughtful opinions on the game we love. That's Planet Football TV. See you next time.